Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory from the Relevant Radio app. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to our weekly Gentleman's Hour today on Trending. A couple weeks ago, an open letter was written, some of whom signing the letter include Elon Musk, urging a pause on artificial intelligence that we take this summer before we have a risky and disheartening fall with how far AI has come. It's a fascinating conversation, one that touches on everything from the dignity of work, our values as human beings, to what AI can turn into and how far do we take it, who governs it. So if you have a thought on artificial intelligence in the summer of pause, give us a call. The number is 1-888-914-9149. We'll be talking about that a little later during our weekly Gentleman's Hour today. Joining me today on Trending is Dr. Philip Chavez, a good friend and running incredible work talking about the importance of men and masculinity and the God-given mission of men in what God originally intended. You can find him at the Men's Academy. That's themensacademy.org. We'll post the link on social media. Today, we're going to talk about his important work that he's really dove into from the perspective of theology, philosophy, and that natural understanding of men. To talk about this, we're going to discuss the pillars of masculinity, what they are, and how to live them out. If you have a question for my guest today, Dr. Philip Chavez, the number is 1-888-914-9149. Dr. Chavez, welcome back to Trending. It's been quite a while since you've joined us.
It has. It's good to be back, Timory.
Dr. Chavez, you really focus on this idea that there are pillars to a man's identity, that all right. Men are called to be leaders, protectors, and providers. Where does this come from? And I want to tease out what this means, practically lived out. But let's start with where this comes from. Where do you get this idea of this being a pillar of the intended experience and action of men's mission?
Well, I think when men get up in the morning, one of the things they think of right away is, what do I do, right?
So, we can't hear you quite right. We're going to fix that connection so that we can hear you a little stronger. Again, Dr. Chavez can be found at themensacademy.org. That's themensacademy.org. We're going to be unpacking what Dr. Chavez has written extensively on. He runs seminars and training programs for men, both here in the United States and internationally, working a lot, even with our seminarians and priests, at a time when this whole understanding of what it means to be a man is a crisis, even in the face of scandals within the Catholic Church itself. And in general, we live in a culture today where this idea of a man is mocked on modern day television. The idea of patriarchy, you know, modern feminism is so adverse to the idea of patriarchy, all of which we'll actually talk about today on the show. Dr. Chavez is back with us. Dr. Chavez, where does this kind of God-given perspective that you talk about, the pillars of masculinity in a man's mission, come from with regard to being a leader, protector, and a provider?
Well, I think you just mentioned it in some respect with some of the things that men are put down with, but one of those is in some ways patriarchal role. Now, I think we have to remember that it seems to me as more and more I work with men, I see that the one thing or the two things that really mature them is what is to be formed and enabled to be a husband and a father. And so in some way, a father redounds to a certain perfection of the man. And in that fatherhood, and sometimes we refer to the word patriarchy, is a certain role by which he has a special place in the family, and in some way you could say by extension society. And so where he does exercise what it is to be a leader, a protector, and a provider. And deep down, this is I believe every woman wants in her life. She wants a selfless leader. She wants a sacrificial protector. And she also wants a provider who will be steadfast in that duty as well. So I think these are three key pillars which men need in order to be and to fulfill that mission that they have to be that patriarch of the family.
You mentioned that this is what all men should be formed for, to be husbands and fathers. And with that, you mentioned leader, protector, and provider. And so it sounds like what you're saying is that this is very naturally seen in just what men are called to in that fatherhood and in being a husband, and that natural desire that women have, even in studies that have been done over the last handful of years, where radical feminists who believe in everything from men and women aren't really different to, you know, women should work and even, you know, not raise children. We can talk a lot about that and not have children, you know, being pro-abortion, pro-contraception. These same women, when studied with regard to the type of man they want to marry and be with, actually desire a man that's been referred to by secular research as a benevolent sexist, someone who will look at a woman differently, raise her on that pedestal. So it's fascinating because you're saying this is also seen not just in the research, but in what the theology itself points to for men.
I think so. And in some of the work or some of the studies I've seen, say in Pius XI or Pius XII, these were just natural things that they used to speak about, and they did drill into these offices of a man. But I think what happens, there's a few reasons why they get obscured. As I say, I think one of the dominant ones is during adolescence. Adolescens is an accoative Latin word, which means becoming an adult. And so what happens is the reason why we may lose this sense, or men may, in some respect, is when they're formed, that time when they're supposed to be becoming an adult, these things are supposed to be ingrained with them. And I think what happens, we prepare them too much for academia and career instead of focus on these primal things, which, you know, which redound to what it is to be a father of a home. But what happens, I think, too, in losing these things, and when these things somewhat decline, we somewhat weave a society into some kind of egalitarian vision where, you know, the portrait that's being painted is that everything needs to be egalitarian or everything on an equal level. And what we find that, and I've heard you talk about studies as well, and we spoke about this in the past, it doesn't really work in relationships when we try to make everything equal 50-50. It just doesn't work.
And I think that's very true. Nothing in life is 50-50, or should
that's
we
right.
say fair, right? I think that
right.
when people want to talk a lot about fairness, but when we focus so much on equality and quote-unquote fairness, we miss, one, differences, but two, responsibility. So in your work, you talk tremendously, and if you're just joining us, that's Dr. Philip Chavez from the Men's Academy. You talk about the pillars of masculinity. Can you discuss what they are and how that is a man's mission?
Sure. Everything that I do in my work, I try to connect with a man's heart. So it seems to me if God made us for a role, he would give a drive for that role. And so we can see that drive in a man's heart. And I believe a man's three key questions he asks himself, sometimes men finish this three-part trifle themselves, you know, what do I do? Who am I and where am I going? All men ask these questions. What do I do? I'm a leader, I'm a protector, and I'm a provider. In the supernatural, I'm a priest, a prophet, and a king. And what's my identity? Well, I move from what I say, a beloved son, to a loyal brother, to a vital man, then devoted husband, a strong father, and veteran sage. These are three key pillars of a man's identity: son, brother, man, husband, father, sage. Journey is much more complex, but as I've looked at this paradigm for a while, at least I've held it fast for at least 15 years, a man moves from a period of exploration, then initiation, then testing, especially in his youth. Then he has to move into adulthood. He must move into resolution, combat, and glory. Now, it would take a little bit to unpack these, but I find that, yeah, in the development of the boy, he needs exploration, initiation experiences, finally needs testing to prove himself a man. And when he becomes a man, he needs to be resolute about all those things he's learned. And then he'll need to go into battle. He'll need to go into a battle by which he must engage himself in difficulties in life, all for the glory of, you know, of God, finally. But a glory should redound to him and the masculinity he should become.
And I'm interested in the fact that you mentioned testing in particular, because historically, cultures have always had this clear marker in a culture of a transition of a boy from the time that is more prominently spent with the mother within the home, within this idea of the nest, to being out with the father. You know, you think about different cultures, such as primitively the first hunt, or in Judaism, there's been the bar mitzvah. There have been different markers, often right around the age-ish of around 8 years old, where a boy is taken into a certain level of testing, but transition into the care and responsibility of the father, being with the men and having already, even at that age, a certain sense of responsibility. So talk a little bit more about that testing that needs to occur for young men in light of these cultural markers that we've had historically, but have lost today.
Sure. Well, it built into the man is that need for testing, because there's certain things he needs to accomplish, say, to become the full man he's called to be, to become worthy of a woman. And part of that testing, it used to be in the past with, I say, combat arts, so to prove himself a good soldier or a fighter for his community or his state, but also, too, a good provider. So men used to be, you know, tested in their ability to go hunt and to forage in a forest, which were considered necessary skills in the past. And so, yes, I find that those testing skills in the past usually had to do something with what it took to be a provider, to provide for his family, for food, or what it meant to actually protect his society. And so those, at least in terms of traditionally, were the two main areas of testing. And so men had to prove themselves, because one of the things they need to do when they move into adulthood and finally into marriage, they need to be confident they have these skills. Men fall apart when they're not confident in the things they need to exercise in order to live out life. Men are in some way very fragile that way. That's why they need to be trained and tested, because if they don't meet the test, then they have to be retrained and resummoned and to go out there to improve those skills.
So you're saying confidence has a lot to do, lack of confidence in today's society has a lot to do with the lack of testing that's occurring that historically used to happen through the hunt, right? This ability to forage in the forest to provide a meal. So how do you do that in the 21st century to build that confidence that a man really needs to be a functioning member of society?
On one level, you know, every boy, when he picks up a stick, it's a sword or a spear. And I believe every boy needs to be trained in the combat arts. For this reason, he learns a number of skills from it. Now, in the past, in the Christian tradition, we used to teach the faith to the boys in the midst of these combat arts. But aside from other things, it is incumbent to teach a man, especially today in today's context, because he is called to be a provider. All men should learn, all youth, young men should learn some kind of skill, some kind of trade. And I did. My father was a contractor, and so I learned a lot from that. You learn how to bond with other men. You learn certain skills, and so there's a certain confidence. You know, if a woman wants to know if the roof is leaking or the toilet's running, she wants a man in her house and knows he could fix it. And a man will be a very insecure if they can't tend to these basic needs or find out what's wrong with the car or whatnot. So there's a number of things which redound to practical abilities of a man. And this is where he gains a certain honor, also an additional honor from his wife, when he knows how to do these things. Every woman wants a man who's capable in that respect.
Well, we have questions coming in that I'm really intrigued to take in a moment here with Dr. Philip Chavez. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. Dr. Philip Chavez is from the Men's Academy. You can find him at themensacademy.org. We'll post that on social media, as well as the episode notes for the podcast for today's show. Dr. Chavez, you've talked a lot about the importance of learning to provide, being tested, and how essentially this is fundamental to the formation of young men to bring them into society today. You mentioned historically that different types of combat arts have been a part of passing on the faith. How was that done before?
When boys were growing up, you know, it was just understood that part of your natural duty was that you had to defend your city-state or just your local community or whatnot. And so it was just understood that when a boy used to grow, he used to learn how to wrestle and then use other things of combat arts, boxing, and then he used to, you know, be more trained in sophisticated art of weapons. But what happens, we have to remember in European Christian history, is that the faith was very much interwoven in the life of the person. Parish life, community life was very much just life for a young man. And so a lot of times when he learned things of faith, he learned them through these coaches and these trainers, And there's many lessons. Anyone who's learned even just the basics of boxing can know that there's various lessons you can learn. But one of the things that becomes very incumbent, why the combat arts are so important, when a man learns to lay down his life and has those fundamental skills, he conquers a fundamental fear that he has, which is to defend himself, to protect his life, and to protect the lives of those he loves. And one of the reasons it becomes so important on a supernatural level is, remember that Jesus tells us here, gives us that invocation, that admonition more than any other, is to be not afraid. And men used to work through a lot of those fears that they had once they learned how to gain confidence in the combat arts and learn how to take a hit and not be threatened by that. So there's a number of skills which a boy could use that would teach him and lead him such that he would see the natural order and the supernatural order some way woven together. In fact, I often say this is why the Irish were so clever. You remember when they used to produce many priests, these young men were all boxing in the basements of their churches.
I want to come back on that topic. What combat arts you recommend, why that's so important for the formation of men, whether you're an adult today or maybe you're raising young men as well. That's Dr. Philip Chavez from the Men's Academy. You can find him at themensacademy.org. That's themensacademy.org. We're going to come back continuing to talk about the pillars of masculinity, leader, protector, and provider, what that looks like, and also take your questions for Dr. Philip Chavez. Are you raising men? Are you struggling as a man today? Dr. Chavez is the person to ask. The number is 1-888-914-9149. We'll be right back here on Trending, also talking about putting limitations on artificial intelligence.
You're listening to Trending with Timory, where you can discuss what matters most to you. Join the conversation, 888-914-9149.
It's our weekly Gentleman's Hour today on Trending. If you have a question for my guest, Dr. Philip Chavez, he is from the Men's Academy. He's the founder of the Men's Academy, and he helps informing men to be men today in a culture that says it's bad to be a man, that it's toxic to be a man. I think one of the things we were discussing before is the difficulty many men have today in feeling competent in their role as a husband, a father, competent in their skill sets and in their faith. And one of the key things that you mentioned, Dr. Chavez, in a culture that no longer has these testings for young boys into manhood, is how important the combat arts are and how it used to be that the combat arts was a part of the formation of a young man, and how the Irish used to have, you know, boxing clubs within the Catholic churches. Talk to me a little bit more about the combat arts and how men today should incorporate that into their life to grow as a human being, because growth as a human being is in our faith life, and the two go hand in hand.
Sure, they really do. And again, I really believe that the formation of the combat arts has a very deep spiritual element, especially if a coach is very cognizant of that, and he could teach life lessons through the combat arts, moral lessons, ethical lessons, but also two lessons of the faith. And yes, it seems to me, too, the most basic art to teach a boy is the art of wrestling. And so every young boy, when he's even two or three, wants to wrestle with his dad, right? And so he finds himself, that's actually, even studies have shown that's even good for his development, right? And even that touch and the contact with his father, it's so important to have that. And he should move on with his uncles, but he should also be wrestling with his brothers, right? And kind of roughhousing with them a little bit. It's actually very good. Even when he pushes the envelope, and this is why it's very important for boys, they grow and to learn how to be fearless when they do push the envelope a little bit. Boys should always be given some leeway to go a little bit beyond their parameters, because we must always be tested in some way beyond what we think we can handle. This is why even for any kind of exercise program. Now, when you get a little bit older, like men are like myself, but then you got to back down a little bit. But with younger and even growing, even in midlife, men should be doing things which push the envelope a little bit to show them that they have, that they go beyond what they think their limit is. And it's very, very important, because men will often be tested and will look at obstacles or challenges in life and say, well, I can't do this. But if they're formed in certain activities or certain arts, the martial arts, by which they're tested beyond, then they can learn how to accept even harder trials when they come.
So let's talk a little bit more about those key pillars, leader, protector, and provider. We've talked a lot about this idea of provision. What does it mean for a man to be a leader today? And I kind of add a caveat to that question because I think many men struggle with this idea that, you know, masculinity, the alpha male is the one that's leading the pack. Yet I don't think that's what leadership means. Can you give us a definition of leadership lived out and how all men are called to this?
Gosh, that'd be, let's see, I'd have to think of a little bit about what a good, solid definition would be. But, part of the leadership, when one, it's the guiding of others to whom one naturally has office to guide over. And so that could be in the workplace, but normally we find it in mainly in the community of the home, right? And so it's one who takes a guiding role into all those under him, his wife and his kids. But one of the things that, you know, that a wife wants to see and the children want to see, they want to see a father who does have confidence, right? And they also want, I think secondarily, they want him to see that he has a sense of sacrifice within him. And I think most women, too, they will be more apt and more willing to follow a man who they know will make a sacrifice for them, who they know will lay down their life for them as Christ loved his church. And so I think what's incumbent upon young men is to learn what it is to be a sacrificial leader. I think what's happened, in society we have so many leadership programs now. In the last 30 years, they've grown so much. They've been some way mixed in some sense that, you know, most young men today in their 20s are trained to think, well, you know, a woman can lead in the home as just as easily as I can, right? So they're somewhat trained and conditioned to not accept that leadership role on the part of what it is to be a father, because they find that entirely unintelligible. And anything but that has been fostered in their development.
What you're talking about makes me think a lot about this idea of self-possession. As you were talking about the importance of a man to be able to be competent, confident, and sacrificial as a leader, you mentioned that a man as a leader is meant to guide those who are entrusted to his care, who he is meant to guide. Now, if you're a father, that's obvious. And a husband, you know, you have your spouse, you have your children. But if you're single, you know, that might be a little blurry. And I think a lot of men, single men today, are struggling to figure out what that looks like. But you have to look at your state in life. You know, where are you working? Who are those entrusted to your team in the work environment that you can have this positive role model and influence on by that self-possession of leadership? What would that look like? Can you talk a little bit about that in, say, the workforce or being an uncle as well, even?
Sure. You know, even for myself, Timory, you know that I'm not married and I've always been single, yet I have many mentorees. And so I find a great sense of fulfillment and a great sense of even being a father in just reaching out to many men. And so I don't know, they somehow naturally gravitate toward me. I do have many nephews, and in some way I'm connected with some and not so much others. And nieces, I don't have so much of a role with them. But there's many men I meet with in my church, local community. Of course, my work lends itself to that, too, because a lot of men seek my advice on a number of things. But even so, the sense of being a father is very, very strong in me. In fact, I probably get more wishes on Father's Day more than most natural fathers do, because I just see myself as a father kind of figure to many men. I just take on that persona. And it's interesting, too, that many need that validation by the leaders over them, we could say, or mentors, who really do have a genuine concern about them. It's so important. I see this even my own younger sisters and even my nephews and nieces. When I show a genuine concern, they're very responsive to that, and they'll surrender to that and tell me usually the things that might be troubling them or where they may need help or where they just want to talk.
That genuine concern is something that I think many men struggle with. Many men today, I think, tend to be a little aloof. For some reason, right. I think being aloof is connected with masculinity. You know, don't necessarily show emotion, good or bad. Don't share too much about yourself, you know, because that means you're strong if you just kind of close yourself off. But what you just described is making yourself present and available. Can you maybe discuss what sure. that looks like as a man to practice that fatherhood, whether it's with your biological children or those people who seem to have come to you and are in a certain respect entrusted to your care, and somehow you find yourself in a situation of being a mentor to them.
Sure. Okay. To go back, just before I answer that really quick, I just want to say that one of the things where men are stuck, especially younger guys, younger adult men, is that they're so caught up in their own needs, they can't see the genuine needs of others, okay, male and female. But it'll even block them with seeing the younger needs of the men around them. And so I find myself, even when I encounter young men, there was a young man talking about a vocation recently. Actually, he goes to my church and he just wanted to engage in a conversation. I just realized that, gosh, you know, I start talking about just what it would be just to get exercise and weightlifting. And he backed off and I explained the many reasons why they could be beneficial. And so he really accepted that. But one of the things I find, now I'm just, because I have a doctorate in character development, I can usually see very quickly where a man needs help in some area of his character development, natural and supernatural. And so most men, if you show a genuine concern, I'm actually a little bit aggressive on the side of helping them, because men are too afraid to ask, right? And so usually I find myself in a position, and sometimes I make mistakes, but I don't think most of the time that I don't think so. And I'll just, you know, maybe insist or suggest something very strongly, which I think they ought to be doing. Because for men need to reach out to other men in a strong way. It just can't be, it can't be soft. It's got to be very directive. It's got to be very concerted. And especially if you see a certain need where a man needs to grow, men need to come into their lives. They can't expect young men to ask them. It just doesn't work that way. Men usually don't ask for help. It's the older men who must see the needs of these younger men and go after that, and to help them directly that way.
And not to be afraid. I think often, right. You know, you mentioned that you're kind of bold in the way you reach out and challenging,
right.
But in a very paternal way. And some people might be
exactly.
opposed and turned off by that. But when it comes out of a place of concern and love, not a belittling concern, I think many men see that that's intriguing. It's different. And in some ways, it's inspiring to have someone believe in them and foster that confidence. And Dr. Chavez, it even makes me think of one of the very first things we hear God say after the incarnation and Jesus Christ is in his public ministry, right there as Jesus enters into his public ministry, at specifically that moment we know of the baptism in the Jordan, God comes down in that cloud and overshadowing Jesus. And he said, "This is my beloved son, with whom I am well pleased." And so there's that
right.
confidence that the Father is showing in the Son that I think many men fail to show, again, out of a fear of a false sense of masculinity.
I think so. And also, too, remember that when a man exhorts another young man to something more difficult, it's another type of validation, which says, "Son, I know you have this in you, and I know you can accomplish this." And that's what men need to hear. They need to hear that validation, and usually that validation towards something hard. Not that they're just good or that they have dignity, but they see within them a certain ability, which needs to, for many men, needs to be woken up, a certain challenge. You know, Jesus did, you know, he told his disciples, you know, I'm going to make you fishers of men. I will make you leaders of men. And that, you know, Lord, where do I sign? You know, so they're very attracted to that. But our Lord tells us, you know, he exhorts us, that he, you know, he says, if they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you, but you can handle this. And so it's interesting that, what is it, John 16, where our Lord was telling him all the suffering that's waiting to happen right after his last supper before he goes out into the garden. You know, in John 16:17, he has his prayer, but 16, he has the exhortation, telling him that you're going to undergo these things, but I will be with you. I will be present. And that's something a young man needs to know, too, is that, you know, and that's why I usually tell young men, too, even I do this to my sisters, none of your younger mentorees, I let them know I'm available for you. You can call me at any time. Let me know if there is any way I can help. Because they want to know that you're not just going to throw advice at them, but that you're going to be with them in the long run.
And isn't that so necessary? I think finding that balance that is, I think for some people, such a tight rope, they're afraid to even try to discover it. They're afraid, you know, sometimes we're afraid to screw up, so we don't try at all. Yet when you're talking about fatherhood, fatherhood means effort, and it means we're not going to do it perfectly, and that it means putting your neck on the line in a certain respect. Something Father Nathan Cromley said yesterday here on Trending is that we need to be willing to have flesh in the game, and it kept making me think about the sacrifice of Christ on the cross and what the Eucharist is, and that I think to live that Eucharistic lifestyle means to be willing to have flesh on the line as Christ did. And again, that means we will not do it perfectly, but in Christ there's grace present there. Can you speak to the role of really allowing your faith to form these pillars of being a leader, protector, and provider, and that responsibility to practice that fatherhood, whether you're married with children or single?
Sure. Well, as a base for that, I think you're right in the sense that you said, you mentioned the dynamic of sacrifice in a man's role. And yes, that's what's essential dynamic in our faith. It's essential dynamic in life. And one of the things by which the faith should be incorporated, which men are often missing today, is one of the ways they learn sacrifice is through the Mass. Remember, the Mass in a generic way and in a specific way, both, is a sacrifice. And so, you know, when a priest offers the Mass, he should be communicating to his faithful that they're clear, you know, I'm making a sacrifice of myself with Christ, you know, for the glory of God. And so when the priest offers that sacrifice, it's not just about him just reenacting what Christ did and that, you know, he's bringing about the body and blood of Christ for which we gain, you know, grace and merit. But no, the priest is offering himself up. And one of the things that young men need, they need to continue as the faithful need. And in women as well, we all need to continually make this offering of self-sacrifice, which we should be making in the Mass every time we go. In some way, that should be a primal dynamic. The Father in heaven is going to take care of us. He will provide for us through his Eucharist, and he will bless us in all things and guide us as a father. But on our, and we should just know that. But our part is sacrificing ourselves with the Son, you know, for his glory. And I find, yes, men need to, in order for healthy psychic development in the natural and supernatural life, need to make those acts continual sacrifice, which they could do in a very sublime way in the Mass.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez from the Men's Academy. If you have a question for him in character formation, especially for men and young men, give us a call. The number is 1-888-914-9149. We had a question come in from Chris talking about his son who's in his 30s. We were talking earlier this week about anger and the important role that exercise plays. And he asked, how do I help my son who's struggling with anger? He's married, he has children, and yet I see this intensity of anger within him. Someone who's trying to practice his faith, yet, you know, he doesn't see, you know, how to help solve that challenge of anger. And I think this is an interesting question, Dr. Chavez, because many men today, I think, are angry because of their state in life, even if, you know, to some it might seem as if they have it all. Is this fundamental to most men and anger is just something men have to deal with? Or is there something going on right now in the culture of how men are interacting with the world around them?
That's a very good question. That's very broad. And yes, you're very correct. Men are filled with a lot of anger today, which manifests itself in kind of a frustration, a sense of abandonment, and all these other dynamics, and which actually leads to fear. But it, unfortunately, anger can lead to a resentment, and that becomes very toxic for the soul, and especially becomes very toxic in relationships. But the things for which they're anger for, many of them feel that are a little frustrated that they haven't been led in things. In fact, when a man grows up and feels like his father or his mentors or his aunt or uncles really haven't properly trained him, that will make him angry. But ultimately, Timory, it just seems to me that the way a man ultimately needs to deal with anger, he must understand that all things that happen to him are all things that really happen to Christ first. Everything that happens to us, it really happens to Christ. He took it all on. And we're called not to walk in our journey. We're called to walk in Christ's journey. And when we finally see that everything that's happened to us or did not happen to us really happened in and through Christ, then we have a way of dealing with it in a way that we can just let it go and understand that our offering is a journey that we are all called to be led in Christ. And so even the things for which, you know, we've dealt with, for which we've been offended, and the things for which we've not been fulfilled in, all that should be surrendered to Christ in the right way. And it's through him we can really let it go. And it's that journey I find it's very important that we see that in life we don't have a journey. Our journey is Christ, and we need to move in him. And that way we can learn the real path of forgiveness.
That's very profound. In life, we don't have a journey. Our journey is Christ. It's that idea of cruciform love, of what we talk about in theology as theosis and Christosis, coming to this understanding of union with Christ. Yet I think that we have that idea of union with Christ, Dr. Chavez, when we see the cross and we're able to kind of see purpose for our suffering. And, you know, we walk through Lent, we walk through Holy Week and through the Passion, and you come to the resurrection. I think there are a lot of people who take that one day to celebrate and kind of say, oh, yay, Jesus rose from the dead. But they want to stay on that cross and not go through the transformation, the resurrection that Christ is calling us to.
I think you're right. And part of that transformation, you know, I can't help but always keep going back to one of my favorite articles in St. Thomas, Summa Theologia, where Christ, St. Thomas poses the question, well, why specifically the cross? And the cross teaches men to overcome fear because he says it belongs to righteous living that we not stand in fear of anything. And that's what Jesus taught us, basically. But if through the cross, one of the key things Christ teaches us, in fact, Thomas Aquinas lays this a reason first out of, I think he has seven listed. But when we look at Christ and the cross, he came over the fear of death, which is man's greatest fear, not just death itself, but the manner of dying. And so Jesus shows us not to be afraid of the worst form of death. And in that way, we overcome that fear. And by extension, Augustine argues, all other fears, and then we could truly be free. And that's in some way what the cross teaches us. But also on another level too, you know, the cross is an act of redemption, and the cross itself, one of the more important reasons, I think, things that men need to learn about the cross is that in that act of redemption, we've been bought back. So that horrific sacrifice was really to do what? To show us our value. And so when we look at the cross, we should not see it as a mode of strength by which we can overcome our worst fear. But in that cross, God is showing our value. He wanted to show us how much we are worth, how much he redeemed us for, how much he bought us back. That is the value that we are worth. And I think that's why when Catholics look at the crucifix, we can say that's beautiful because that great sacrifice showing us our great value. I think that's one of the deeper dynamics that happens when we look upon the cross, that we can say it's actually, you know, as we will say, even a crucifix can be a very beautiful thing. When on one level, you know, a man hanging, that's intrinsically a very horrific thing. But when it's about showing a value and showing love in that value, what was offered because of the price he thought we were worth, it's something which strikes us so deeply and so profoundly and just moves us to show, which is ultimately the cross becomes the most incredible act of human validation.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez here on Trending with Tim Ray. Dr. Chavez, thank you for the work you're doing in forming the male character today. You can find him and his work, including some fantastic book resources, at themensacademy.org. That's themensacademy.org. He has whole books on the formation and the pillars of masculinity, really unpacking further these topics we've been discussing. So check him out at themensacademy.org. We'll be right back here on Trending with Tim Ray to discuss artificial intelligence and to take your questions. The number is
1-888-914-9149. Listening
to Trending with Timory, where you can discuss what matters most to you. Join the conversation, 888-914-9149.
Welcome back to Trending. I want to start a conversation about artificial intelligence, especially after the recent letter that came out, signed by Elon Musk and others, encouraging for a summer of pause on artificial intelligence and where it's going. There's fear and concern, the need for a governing body. We'll talk about that in just a moment. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. I had a question come from Barbara in Chicago. Barbara, welcome to Trending. What's your question today?
Hi, Carl. My question is, my granddaughter is getting married in a civil ceremony outside. She's Catholic. The groom is Catholic. She has asked me to do a reading. I don't think I should do it, but I'm not sure.
Oh, goodness, Barbara, you are in a difficult situation. I do not envy you, and this is probably one of the most uncomfortable Catholic moments I think many Catholics go through, is when we have a loved one who is getting married, they're Catholic, and they're not getting married in the church. A lot of stuff kind of goes into this. As Catholics, for those who don't know, if we're Catholic, we are supposed to marry only within the Catholic Church, and even special permissions are required if we're marrying someone who isn't Catholic or not baptized at all. That's a whole longer kind of conversation, but we're not supposed to go to the weddings of someone when they are Catholic and getting married outside of the Catholic Church. I know that prudentially it has been encouraged that if there's irreparable damage that will be done by not attending, that in your conscience it's something that must be discerned. But I think that sometimes we give a little bit too much of a cop-out with that discernment. I think that if there's irreparable damage, that is definitely something to be discerned how to handle it, but it's different when you're participating also in the ceremony. So in general, we are called not to attend the wedding of a Catholic outside of getting married in the Catholic Church. Now, you're being asked to even do the reading at this civil ceremony, civil union. And so what I would start with as a baseline is just encouraging you to not participate in doing the reading at this civil ceremony. And that could be a baseline, and it could be one of those conversations, given that you are important enough to your granddaughter that you're there and you're participating in this outdoor, quote-unquote, civil union that she's having. She wants you to be a part of it. So having a conversation one-on-one with her would be beneficial, as saying, look, I'm really proud of you, if you are, which I'm assuming you are, for getting married, for wanting to make a commitment. However, you are Catholic, and I want to invite you and encourage you to get married in the Catholic Church. And ask her, is there any reason why you're not getting married in the Catholic Church? And have that just be a starting point. See where it goes. Don't say anything accusing. Just say, is there any reason? And present to her that as Catholics, we're called to marry within the Catholic Church. And you understand she might want an outdoor type of wedding or this or that. Acknowledge what her desires are. Acknowledge the good desire for a commitment. But open that conversation as to what's happening in this circumstance. Asking that question and see where it goes. You might be surprised and say, I want to celebrate this marriage, a wedding, but I want you to do it right. Marriage is so difficult. And I'm sure you know that as a grandmother, someone who's had children, that this marriage needs the graces of the sacrament. And so talk to her about the reality of marriage and that you want her to have all the tools working with her in a culture where divorce rates are so high, where children need the gift not just of an intact, a permanent marriage, which is what the sacrament or commitment is, but also to the grace of that sacramental marriage. And so I would really encourage you to start that conversation, ask those questions. Do you know if anyone else has, Barbara?
I beg your pardon?
Do you know if anyone else has had those questions with her as to why she's not getting married in the church?
No, I don't know. But thank you. You know what? You gave me the opening that I needed. I think I was just so upset over it, I didn't know how to approach her. Mm-hmm. So you've given me, really and truly, thank you for giving me the opening for it. I will do that.
Good. Hang in there. Pray to the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit will guide you even in the most difficult moments in that conversation, because maybe no one invited her to get married in the church. Maybe she doesn't understand why. But again, celebrate that desire for commitment, but talk to her if the opportunity presents itself about how much greater that commitment can be and the need for that sacramental grace. But participating in the actual, you know, ceremony itself and doing the reading really doesn't jive at all with the Catholic Church's teaching. And again, there's that challenge that we're not supposed to celebrate the marriages of someone who is Catholic outside of the Catholic Church, because it's not a marriage without the sacrament. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. Okay, there's so much I want to discuss about artificial intelligence. I want to kick off this conversation, though, and we'll continue it this week. So a few weeks ago, an open letter came out with people signing it, such as Elon Musk, among others. I read a really interesting article on it and read the letter itself. It came out the end of March about how there's a call for a pause on artificial intelligence, that we take a summer to pause and reconsider what's going on. Artificial intelligence is evolving and growing and developing rapidly. Right now, we're at the level of training systems that are known as the fourth iteration of a generative pre-trained transformer. And so there's been a call by people such as Elon Musk and others who have skin in the game in artificial intelligence to pause for at least 6 months. It's interesting because comments have been made from Elon Musk, who uses artificial intelligence even in his own cars, Teslas, and for the autopilot. And he has outright says that AI stresses me out. That's a direct quote. Now, this is coming from someone who in the past has actually expressed frustration over some of the regulators and critics over artificial intelligence and the autopilot system that is in the Tesla. And it's really interesting. I think that if we are seeing people who are using high levels of artificial intelligence inside their work, who are developers of this, if they themselves are saying, we need to take a summer and pause on artificial intelligence, it's a big warning for us. And I want to continue this conversation further in the days to come. But here are just a couple initial thoughts on this, because I want to hear from you. Send me an email, relevantradio.com/trending, or reach out on social media. I think the fact that some of the creators of AI are saying that it's time to take a pause means that they are themselves are afraid of what it has already become, what it's capable of, and also they're afraid of what they're not saying. And it's fascinating, they're showing the fact that there's a need for ethics and morality in what they are creating. And that's significant, because truth, reason, morality, ethics, all of that comes from God. And they're suddenly calling for a governing body to have oversight over what is and is not acceptable with artificial intelligence. Isn't that fascinating? Because artificial intelligence in and of itself, my mom asked me this question about a year ago, which I thought was a really interesting question. And she asked, what do you think the end game is for those who are creating artificial intelligence? What's their end game? What are they working toward? What's their goal? And I was fascinated by this question. And after pondering it a little bit, and even just knowing some of what some of the creators of AI have said, they basically want to create their own deity. They want to create their own God. And what's interesting, though, is at the same time, people are also trying to say, hey, let's wait. We're a little concerned about what this is, what it's becoming. We can talk a whole lot about algorithms, the lack of judgment. Some people like to argue, well, AI is so incredible, it can make judgments, it's impressive. Just because something's impressive based on an algorithm, even an algorithm that can evolve and grow, does not mean that it has human agency, does not mean that it has free will and intellect as a human being, such as you and I do. And so there's a lot to discuss here, because clearly even the creators of artificial intelligence, out of fear and concern for human society, and I would even argue for themselves, their future, the future of their children, are saying, we need to pause and decide what direction we will take with artificial intelligence, who the governing body of AI will be, who will decide what the ethics and morality are of this. And I think this is a distinct moment in technology where the Catholic Church has an important role to play. What do you think that role is? What do you think about artificial intelligence? We've come a tremendous to a point with tremendous growth with regard to what technology can achieve. Even the fact that artificial intelligence is devaluing the value of human work, that a machine can do things that we ourselves as humans have always done. And on a very simple level that I really wouldn't consider artificial intelligence at all, you have something such as today, there's a lot done in the kitchen that you no longer need in terms of how far technology has come, with ovens and dishwashers. Yet you have artificial intelligence capable of, based on an algorithm, making decisions not intellectual free will decisions, but making decisions even in combat to eliminate quote unquote a target, and how there were even debates in San Francisco in the last couple of months where they had actually passed and approved for robots to be used for lethal killing, and that there was major concern over the use of AI and robots in this, and a huge public outcry occurred. We discussed it here on Trending, and they actually decided to pause the lethal robots from being a part of the work that should be done by people, human beings who are capable of loving, capable of understanding situations, and people, and this is really important, who believe in the hope, joy, transformation, and resurrection of the human being. This is why Christianity is so important in the midst of artificial intelligence, that we have a view of human people, that we're not willing to destroy them, we're not willing to simply take and usurp their responsibilities within society, within the home. There's great value to human work. Just because a machine can do it, does that mean that a machine could? Even Pope Benedict XVI, now deceased, talked about how technology in and of itself is neutral, but it's the implementation that sadly is concerning. He commented about how its implementation can be what corrupts hearts. The use of technology and how it can be used to exploit other people for our own benefit is significant. Now, some people like to say, well, technology and artificial intelligence has gone so far that it's doing things that we aren't even aware of. Well, yes, coding can come to a very, very far conclusion and evolve it in and of itself, but that doesn't make it a human being capable of loving and knowing the way only a human being can. So I want to hear your thoughts on artificial intelligence. Write me relevantradio.com/trending and on social media. Coming up next is the Family Rosary Across America. Dating, marriage, relationships, so many questions. This is Timmy from Trending with Timmy. Thursday is our weekly marriage hour, and we'll do anything and everything from taking your questions on dating, marriage, relationships, including experts in all areas of relationships to long-term marriage. We'll also dive into some of the most important topics confronting how to find true love today. So join me Thursday at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.